Welcome to another episode of Technology Services Success, sponsored by the CompTIA Technology Lifecycle Services Community. This episode is the third in a series recorded at ChannelCon 2017.
So now, let's get to the Q&A. I'll leave these two guys up here. What we want to do here, we are recording this session, so as we go through the red and green cards, please wait for a runner to bring the mic so that we can get it recorded, and I don't even have to start the questions because we're ready to go.
Hi, this is for the managed print. When you bill per seat, how do you deal with those customers where their model, their number of employees change constantly, month to month?
Yeah, that's a good question. If we have variability, and how do we deal with that? Basically, our software actually does monitor active printing users, and then we basically... Does that work now? Check. Okay.
If you turn it on, it works.
Technology, man. I know, right? The green button. It will be my nemesis, yeah. So essentially what we do is we monitor active printing users, and we charge them in bands. So instead of saying, you know, we're going to charge you per user, yes, you're building the quote that way, but you're actually charging them for, let's say, 94 to 103 users, right? And then if they go over that, for some reason they have a hiring spree, then there's another band, which is already detailed in the contract. Because as we all know, we don't want to have to go back and, you know, keep renegotiating, right? So does that answer your question? Good.
It's for Matt. Matt, it's certainly feasible to design a process and have pretty diagrams and so forth. How do you make it stick? How do you facilitate adoption in your company?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's one of the hardest challenges. I mean, it's easy to go, as you said, through the process. To us, it's about that employee involvement. What we found is if most of the stuff is being pushed down from my level or something else, it's just kind of, here's the next thing that the company's asking me to go do, as opposed to a lot of the stuff that we really try to go work for is how the employees are the creators of the idea, how they are the ones driving the innovation. Then you have a personal satisfaction then of, this is mine and I'm going to be able to go do that. Recognition, reward are also big pieces of this, and it's not always just financially. It's how do these guys get recognized for the work that they're doing? How, if they are representing a best practice, is that now being seen? And what I found is that allows that constant drive for them. You know, you start with employee suggestions, right? And it usually, you know, the first couple months are, hey, can I get some Cheetos in the vending machine? And I'd rather have Coke versus Pepsi in that. And then you start to evolve through once they start to see other people doing things where you're getting some pretty innovative ideas. So the way that I've seen it stick the most is have it be built with the employees, where they now feel like this is their charter, this is their voice, and this is their creation, as opposed to the push down from the top.
A little comment on that, though. You have to have buy-in from the executives as well, because if you don't follow it, that's going to go away very quickly. You're not pushing down, but you definitely have to have buy-in, correct?
Correct. And that's what I said before. I mean, I come out of, I've seen multiple different ways that leaders run in operations. So when I say that I really believe that we are hiring employees to run our business, that's not just kind of lip service. A lot of companies will say that, but they haven't empowered their employees to be able to go do that. So you're right. If the culture isn't even built where they feel they have a voice, or they feel that they can go make a difference, or they feel that they can go do something that can be replicated around the world, then it's just this constant us versus them kind of mentality. Operations is really about the people and being there with the people. It's a great point that it's the culture is what's going to facilitate that kind of stuff. And if the culture doesn't hold to that, or there's not enough trust in that, you're dreaming to ever kind of go down that continuum.
This is a follow-on question to that, and this is for Matt. I understand that it's very important to have the input from the employees, but how do you bridge that gap and marry the timeline on your roadmap versus what you're doing in your roadmap for your clients and your employees helping drive that? How do you coordinate all that so it's one united front?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, one that I'm not sure I have the best answer to or the best track record of. It's where the, you know, I think we talked before that, hey, one of the first questions was going to be about the org structure and everything else. This is really where, you know, my job is to really go you know, working with sales, working with finance, working with IT, is really the predefined kind of barriers of where we're going. I know where our customers are taking us to, I know where we need to go, and I know how, in generalities, this is where the business needs to move around that line. And so there are general guide blocks to how we go. It's not just, hey, employees, go get together and just come up with something great. It is, hey, guys, it looks like over the next 6 months we're going to go start to move a lot different in this service line, which is more high-volume distribution. So how are we going to go work through receiving, shipping, all of those processes to gain the velocity that we need that over the next X period of time we're able to go do that? So a lot of it is being able to go bridge through kind of the barriers on where we're driving that, so the employees have kind of a sense to where that is, that what they're working on is driving to the overall strategy, is driving to the customer front and everything else. And then that's why you have multiple layers within the organization. It's myself working with our general managers, who are then working with our engineers, working with IT on keep defining these kind of phases and gates that we're going through for growth. But once we get that defined in terms of our service lines are going to take us here, here's where we need to go to, that's where we value into the employees to help us go bridge around that line. Don't know if that...
Yeah, if I could weigh in on it, the reason that I was going to start with a structure question is out of the research, you know, when we talk about those four bubbles that I had before, we see some different things at an executive level versus a line management level where executives are saying, what I want out of IT is intelligence. I need the intelligence to help make good decisions. And then down through line management, we see them saying, well, we're being told that we have to innovate. Which I think makes a lot of sense. You know, the CEOs and the owners, the C-suite is setting that vision, and then they want to see intelligence out of IT, and then line management is responsible for executing. And so I think that gets into setting the culture and having these discussions all the way up and down the chain rather than having it in silos and different layers of hierarchy.
Yeah, and the other important thing is the communication. In every one of our sites, we literally have a daily huddle with the entire organization every day.
Yeah.
For X period of time, that it's not just here's once a month, here's what happened. Here's every 6 months, here's the town hall with the strategy. We have to keep working with this daily and being able to link that stuff together.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that the huddles are really important. Anytime that we've done an innovative idea at the company, as we start to move through it, we do have weekly huddles to follow progress and see how engagement's going and the rest of it. So.
Hi, Matt. At the beginning of your presentation, one of the slides confused me, and not that that's hard to do. You had business process in the top, then you had business units underneath that across the board, and then you had IT in the bottom supporting that.
I just want to be clear, that was...
That's mine.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so the question's for you.
Woo!
I'm going to have Matt still answer this, but that was my slide.
And then you compare that to the same thing. You had business unit, a business process in the top. Then you had individual blocks of business units, and then you had IT supporting that. So those gaps represent what?
So what you see there between those two pictures, I can probably try to get back to it. It'll take me a little while. But what I'm trying to show there in that picture is the changing nature of the IT function. Here we go. So in this picture, like I said, you know, very traditional mindset for a lot of companies was IT playing an enabling role. They were looking at business units to drive the business objectives, and then IT supported the business units and drove that. Here, what we're seeing more and more and what these guys are talking about is IT is now changing, and it has a direct role in driving business objectives. So when a business says, this is what we want to achieve, they're not just handing that to the sales function or the product development function. They're looking at technology and saying, how does technology get us there?
So this is
IT coming up and being more strategic, and working alongside a business unit rather than just supporting them. Does that help clear it up? And yeah, there's much more on this in our digital organization study, which you can all see on the website and hear more about it. But this is the transition we're seeing. Obviously, a lot of companies are in some form of this, but this transition is happening. And trying to figure out these relationships and what the function of IT is part of the struggle that I think companies are going through as they transform.
I'd just like to hear kind of both your perspectives on that idea portion, that ideate slide, kind of, because there's a whole process in and of itself of just that brainstorming, and how do you make sure everybody's voice is heard and not squash ideas in that process, and so feel free.
Yeah, that's great, and for everyone, if you do the D-School boot camp, one of the things to do is take you through that, and one of the base tenets of good ideation is making sure that that culture of all ideas is thrown on the table, right? That people know that they can contribute. There's no such thing as a bad idea. I know we say it, but with the post-it notes or with other ways that you do that, at least the contributions at first are just get them all out on the table. And then we work through a internal process of voting and working with partners to figure out which ones we actually move through. So the example I gave was actually on a billing model, but that's the same thing that we do if we're looking at an innovative way to fix a problem a customer's having with their software, right? Yeah, so just make sure that it's a culture of openness for ideas, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll also say that,
Just let me finish on that thought. And initially, you're not there to debate the ideas, and I think that's the mistake we make sometimes, that everyone gets in the room, and an idea comes out, and then we start to debate it, and it's like, no, that's, when you're ideating, there's no debating. So just get the ideas out.
Yeah, I mean, in the slides, I mean, we talk about, I mean, this seems like it comes together pretty easy. I mean, I can tell you every day in operations, it is remarkable, the phone calls I get every day from whatever the chaos is in that. And it's just always being there to go keep through working through it. I mean, I'm fortunate enough, now at Flash, we have about 400 employees. I come out of an organization with 300,000. And so you can get a lot closer to your employees now, and you can drive this stuff quicker. I probably couldn't have said the same things for some of the past companies I've worked for, not because the cultures weren't outstanding. It's just harder to get out there and keep working through those. But the thing is, it's a never-ending journey. And what it's also, it kind of goes back into the process of, do we have the right people? I mean, operations is a great example of, it only takes a couple people in an organization to unravel everything that you're doing very, very quickly. It's kind of like that bad apple that you got to go work through. And so it's really being able to work through all those. But it is grueling, grueling work. And it takes unlimited effort to go be able to do that and the commitment to go get through it. But I can tell you, most of the stuff that we talked about with the small group activities and the Kaizans usually started off pretty miserable. And that process through is kind of the drive.
Thank you for listening. Check out episode 4 for the second part of the Q&A.
You can hear more expert information like this by attending ChannelCon in person. Pull up your calendar and save the date for ChannelCon 2018. Here's what to plug in. ChannelCon 2018 will be held July 31st through August 2nd in Washington, D.C. ChannelCon is one of the IT Channel's biggest events. Over 3 days, you get a chance to learn from people who work in IT, choose to take on intensive industry training, or get insider access to some great networking opportunities. Still not sure? Check out ChannelCon 2017. The online rebroadcast is available online, comptia.org/channelcon.